Coomer.
And I'm Jasmine Brand.
You are tuning in for the Halloween edition of the Good Old Days podcast.
We're going to get spooky.
Do you watch John Oliver?
Sometimes.
Okay. Well, I think his latest episode, or at least the last one that I watched was last week. They did a clip. You know how they'll do a montage clip of a bunch of news anchors saying the same thing?
Yeah.
And it was spooky season, and they showed 50 clips of news anchors going, and it's September, it's spooky season, or it's October, and it's spooky season.
Spooktober.
Spooktober. Everyone's obsessed with, I think spooky season is what everyone is clinging to for hope and right now in this.
we need some spooky.
At least Americans, man. Things are too scary in the real world. We need some spooky that's fictional. That's what we need.
Fake spooky.
We need some fake spooky.
We need Casper the Ghost and Wendy the Good Witch.
Wendy the Good Witch. Even Glinda. Glinda has a place in.
Yeah. Hell, at this point, I'll take the Wicked West, the Wicked Witch of the East.
Dude. That actress, I love her. She still terrifies me. I have to hide. I used to hide behind this big golf chair. I called it the golf chair. It was a big double chair that my parents had that had the print was a bunch of golf balls and tees and stuff. So, yeah. Anyway, but I used to hide behind the golf ball chair when that scene would come on The Wizard of Oz and I'd see the Wicked Witch of the West. I would hide because she was so frightening.
Oh, it's at the East. Get my directions.
It's the East. Wrong. Yeah, Wicked Witch of the East.
Is it the East or is it
no,
the
it's
West?
The Wicked Witch of the West. It's the West. Her West? Sister is the Wicked Witch of the East, and she's the one the house falls on.
Yes.
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 Indeed.
I mean, either one. I'll take either one.
I see your note here. Halloween costume story.
I thought as we're doing a Halloween episode, let's talk about what our best Halloween was or our best costume or something Halloween related. Let's give the people some info on us.
Yeah, I have a good story.
Okay, go ahead.
I have a good story. Okay, so I'm from Kansas City, Kansas, but I'm also from Kansas City, Missouri. It's a whole confusing thing, but it doesn't matter. I'm from Kansas City, and Kansas City has some amazing haunted houses. Okay. These are serious haunted houses. So they're whole buildings in downtown Kansas City that have been converted into haunted houses. Several floors, several stories. There's one called the Gate of Hell. There's one called the Beast. And when I was in high school, I had a bunch of friends who wanted to go to a haunted house. And those places scare the crap out of me, but I was ready, right? It's spooky season. It's spooky season. So of course. So we go, I think we went to the Beast, and I mean, at this point, it cost $20 to get in, which was a fortune when I was 16 years old, and you had to wait in a line around the block to get in, because that's how popular these places were. So I think we went to the Beast, and I had a high school boyfriend, and we went in, and there was one room where, and we had been warned about this, but we didn't, you know, it's you're warned about something, and you don't really understand it until you're encountering it. Well, these haunted houses are staffed with just a bunch of character actors who play crazy, scary Texas Chainsaw Massacre style characters, right? So you walk through the house and they just scare the shit out of you. Well, in one of these rooms, there's a guy with a chainsaw with the blade taken off, but he's revving it. So you're all disoriented. You're walking through. This guy with a chainsaw comes from my right. I see him. I start freaking out. I grabbed my high school boyfriend by the scruff of the neck and used him as a human shield to get around. And the guy's putting the chainsaw blade on his leg, like screaming at us. And we're just trying to haul ass out of there. But I used my high school boyfriend as a human shield. So not one of my prouder moments, but I survived.
I probably would have done the same thing.
it was instinct. I grabbed the back of his hoodie and shoved him in front of this chainsaw guy. I'm it's not gonna be me.
See, I can't do haunted houses because I hit things when I'm scared and I don't actually.
I want to see you just punch some dude in the face. Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yeah.
I was the scarer one year, not on purpose. So I used to live behind a hospital, and behind me was the grounds of an old mental hospital. And I dressed up as a nurse. I didn't even think about it. I just found a lab coat and I'm like, oh yeah, this is perfect. And I looked like Nurse Ratched, with the white,
There's a new series about her on Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. So I looked like her, and I stood in the shower, and my friend like splattered me in blood. So I had blood everywhere. And we decided after spending a while at my house to go to the downtown little area in this town. This was in England. And to get there, we had to walk partially on the property of the old mental asylum and partially through the hospital. Well, of course, it's a hospital and it's Halloween. So there was a ton of people around. And I managed to scare the life out of some poor older people that were doing their like nightly rounds on the outside of the hospital. But yeah. That.
So what are we talking about today, Jasmine?
Witches. I'm so excited.
Witches. All right.
Halloween staple.
Halloween staple indeed. But it wasn't always like that. Right?
No.
Tough times for witches in the past.
Absolutely. And this is a very real part of some people's lives going super far back. And we're going to go back outside of our usual comfort zone again to the 1300s, where we're going to start with one of the first, like, I don't know if it's one of the first witch trials in Ireland and the UK or.
So it's the first witch trial. That resulted in the death of someone accused of witchcraft.
There we go.
So it's the first burning at the stake.
Scary stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to go through a couple of different stories and I guess go through a bit more of the general attitudes towards witches and witchcraft, specifically in the UK, starting in the 1300s and coming forward almost to modern day. I have some fun more like modern aspects of witches in the UK. But we're going to start with this story of Alice Kittler and essentially her journey through being accused of being a witch and what that looked like. And that's going to set us up to talk about witches in the UK going forward.
So this is very different from our usual episode. We've compiled a bunch of different stories here. We're not telling you one specific story. So put your listening ears on. Pay attention. So if we're at the end and you're like, I don't remember them talking about this at minute 10, that's because we weren't talking about this at minute 10. So yeah, fair warning. So perk your ears up. All right. So without further ado, I'm going to start with the story of Alice Kittler. This story has it all. Sexism, evil stepchildren, a stepmother, xenophobia, a clash of church and state, wealth, power, and almost an Elizabeth Taylor amount of husbands. All right. So Alice Kittler, she was a Flemish immigrant. They moved to Kilkenny in the mid to late 1200s. Alice had four marriages. Her first was in 1280 to a local Kilkenny moneylender named William Outlaw, which I think is the coolest name that has ever existed. But they had one son. Can you guess what his name was? It was William. William Outlaw. Now, the second marriage was around 1302. So the William Outlaw, the senior, had passed away. And so Alice marries a second time, again, another local moneylender, another Kilkenny moneylender, named Adam LeBlond of Callan. And they were briefly accused of murdering husband one, but managed to throw off suspicion by accusing people of being jealous of their wealth. Fun fact, the old Irish term for poisoner is the same word for witch. So, fun fact there. They were super wealthy. Alice's son, who kept track of her finances and businesses, held £3,000 for the couple. And this is in the 14th century, the 1300s. So you can imagine just how much that would be nowadays. The average person at the time earned 1.5 pennies per day. 1.5 pennies per day. Marriage number three was in 1309 to Richard Val. He was a landlord. He also had a son named Richard. I'm shocked. And he becomes that, you know, Richard the Younger becomes Alice's stepson. But Alice and Richard the Younger are not going to have a great relationship because Richard the Senior died around 1316. And Alice sued her stepchildren to ensure that she got her dower. Think of an old style prenup. she claimed Richard Jr. was withholding all that was due to her. So bad blood starts a brewing at that point. She does marry a fourth and final time, and we're not really sure when this happens, but she marries a knight named John Le Pur. And at some point in the marriage, he got sick and changed his will to ensure Alice and her eldest son would be well cared for. So essentially changed the will to make sure Alice got everything. And she'll be accused of supernaturally enchanting him to make sure she got all there was to get. And I think he ends up dying of arsenic poison, or ends up dying of, like, his symptoms are pretty close to arsenic poisoning, which made it a little suspicious. But anyway, so in 1324, Alice was accused by her stepchildren of witchcraft. And at the time, there were no laws specifically against, what, the accusation?
There was no laws in the secular courts against witchcraft, because witchcraft was a common practice at this time.
So if it were going to be charged, it would be like a misdemeanor, basically.
If that, I mean, you have to prove that there was some sort of harm. So they couldn't go about it within the normal courts at this point in time. Okay. They had to go through the church courts, and they were two separate entities. So you would have secular law and then religious law, or ecclesiastical law, which is what the kids go for.
Because there were no laws specifically against this, the stepkids didn't have a hefty measure of recourse. They accused Alice of withholding finances, that she was impoverishing the stepchildren of her deceased husbands, her three deceased husbands, and that she was doing it via witchcraft, or, you know, yeah.
Four deceased husbands.
Well, the knight doesn't die until after.
That's true. Sorry, my
bad. She marries him while this whole thing is going on. The stepkids are going to approach the Bishop of Ossory. And apologies for my pronunciation. It's terrible. But this man's name was Richard Ledready. And I'm going to call him Tricky Dick from here on out. Okay? Just to make it easier for everyone to understand. But Tricky Dick is the Bishop of Ossory. Tricky Dick convened a council who brought up 7 charges against Alice and her supposed accomplices. These charges included not attending mass, offering sacrifices to demons, human or otherwise, having made potions, love potions. Alice was also accused of having regular sexual intercourse with a demon named Robin, who sometimes disguised himself as a black man, a black cat, or a large black dog. And that is how she amassed her wealth. Makes sense. Yep. Sounds pretty reasonable.
Just the name, Robin. I want to know where they got that from. A demon named Robin. It's like the most calm, placid name.
Alice flees Kilkenny, and she heads to Dublin. And Alice is a well-to-do noblewoman. She has a lot of connections, so she does quite well for herself in Dublin. But her son, William Outlaw, stays behind. And William Outlaw is going to come to her defense when these charges are being brought by Tricky Dick. And William pointed out that no warrant could be drawn for Alice until 40 days had lapsed since excommunication from the church. And this leads to a really complex legal pursuit. Without getting too into the nitty-gritty, there's a lot of back and forth. But essentially, Tricky Dick is going to come out victorious against at least some of the people who associated with Alice. He got this swell of support. He was able to play on the suspicions and of the common people, the people who were inhabiting Kilkenny, and able to turn the tide of public opinion against Alice. And so at that point, Alice flees altogether, and she's never seen again. But Tricky Dick's not over. All right. What he's going to do is he is going to round up her known associates, including a maidservant named Petronella Domitia. They whip Petronella 6 times in public. And when she doesn't confess, they burn her at the stake. The rest of the associates, including Alice's son, William Outlaw, after they're under torture, they do confess. the first punishment dealt out to William Outlaw Jr. is he has to attend mass 3 times a day for a year. And when Tricky Dick finds out William Outlaw Jr. isn't doing that, he has him arrested and thrown in prison again. And the only way he's able to escape the prison sentence at that point is to immediately get on a ship and go to Rome, the Holy Land, which I thought was pretty interesting. So really big turning point, I think, in law, at least in how witchcraft is viewed specifically in, like, what, Great Britain, that whole area. And we start to see more and more declarations of heretics, more and more terrible, torturous means used to get people to admit that they're witches. I mean, it just turns into a whole big mess, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it goes from here. And this case also sets the precedent for essentially accusing women of having sexual relationships with the devil or demons. And that's how they get their witch's mark, which was something that they would look for in accusations. I mean, these poor women were searched from head to toe if they were accused of being witches. And it could be something like a mole or a sunspot, something. And then that meant that you were a witch and you were in consort with the devil.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you had like a birthmark on your face? Are they just gonna...
Yeah, you're in consort with the devil.
That sounds like a good time.
Always.
The story of Alice Kittler is told in a book called The Burning Time by an author named Robin Morgan. And this book is fantastic. I highly recommend it. I actually got the recommendation when I went to see Gloria Steinem in Nashville. She was talking about this book and said it was an absolute must read. And I secured it from the library the next day. So really good read. What, how does this change the culture surrounding witchcraft in modern Britain? And when I say modern Britain, I mean like after the 1300s.
Early modern Britain.
Yeah. Okay.
Early modern times in Britain. And it changes it a lot because there is this culture of healers, or more often called cunning folk, that probably still practiced paganism. I mean, again, it depends person to person, but probably still practiced elements of paganism, if not entirely were pagan. And they would provide herbal and medicinal cures for their local communities. And they were thought to be magic. And magic is something that we see written about throughout history. I mean, in the covering of Boudicca that we just did, there's an element of magic when we talk about the Druids. So it's the same idea. And so magic isn't necessarily an evil and bad thing. And in a lot of these British communities and a lot of early modern communities, this is a staple. You have a healer, you have a family of cunning folk. That is normal. You would expect to see that from village to village. And these are the people that you would go to if you were sick, or if you lost something, or you needed a love potion, or whatever. I mean, usually what they did was pretty normal. It wasn't anything miraculous. They're not trying to sink ships and
take some melatonin. I'm not trying to give you a silver bullet to shoot a werewolf.
Yeah. I mean, and there were extreme things that some of them would do in those cases, but most of the time it would be like, here's a love potion to like promote a love connection for you. Let me help you find something that you've lost. Let me make sure that you have a good crop this year, or a good yield on your dairy, whatever it might have been. It's going to be those little day-to-day things. Almost like a wish. You're making a wish. They're going to help you cast a spell. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. So that is essentially the culture of witchcraft. And I read an article that said it essentially was like a service industry. Is you would go to a cunning person or someone that later gets called a witch, and you would tell them what you needed, and then they would perform that service for you, and it would be an exchange of money for that. So that's how they made their income. This was their job, essentially. This all changes when the ecclesiastical law, so church law, changes to well, make witches into bad people, into people that have consorted with the devil and they are against the church.
Well, it inverts. I think one of the articles you sent me, it phrased it like, this is the point where we see Christianity inverted. Okay, so witchcraft at a certain point before the 1300s, it was just a part of local ritual. But when what we see with this first witch trial is we see the inversion of Christianity. It becomes, witchcraft becomes the opposite of what Christianity is. It's consorting with the devil. And that changes everything.
It does. And that is a really big part of their communities, because early modern Britain is set up by parishes. So you had your local parish. Everyone in your community went to that church. You had your, you know, head of the church there, whoever that might be. It might be a bishop, or it depends on how large of an area you were living in, depending on what rank of person you had within the Catholic Church there. And so they took all of their orders all the way down the line from the Pope. The Pope is gaining a distrust in witches. And really, I mean, you could look at this as a battle against other religions, because paganism is another religion.
Well, I also think they realize there are fiscal implications to not having a community wholeheartedly invested in the church. Think about that. Let's think about the example of Alice Kittler. Kittler, what is wrong with me? Alice Kittler. It's like Hitler with a K. Alice, we see this play itself out in the case of Alice Kittler. She completely undermined the authority of the local bishop, and he had to basically write to the archdiocese to get people on his side, because the community was with Alice Kittler. She was a local healer, you know. So think about this: if you brand all of these people who have a really high standing within their communities, they're providing medical care, they're providing a service to the community that the community relies upon, and they have influence among that community. Think of how much influence you will be able to garner if you can eliminate those people from the community. So how do you do that? You brand them as witches.
They're evil. Overwhelmingly, I think it's 75 to 85% of the people who were accused of witchcraft from this point on are women. And that is because most of the cunning folk are women, because they also double as your local midwife. They are going to help you have your babies. And
boom,
there you go. So it's another way, again, to control women. It's specifically looking at them. And some men get caught up in the process, and they are, well, unfortunately, they're part of that. And I don't think they particularly care, because cunning folk and healers and the people that I was talking about in these societies tend to be poorer. They're not on the higher end of society always. Alice is an exception to that. But usually they are the poorer end of this society. Because again, remember, we're in feudalism at this point. So you have the lord and then all of the peasants. And that was essentially how this is going to go for most of the time that we're looking at.
Well, and another thing, too, I mean, I think the saying is whoever holds the keys to heaven controls the world. So if you make people frightened of other people who offer an alternative viewpoint, you will rally the average normal person behind your cause. If you make them afraid of the world, if you make them afraid to do anything contrary to what you're telling them to do, that's real power.
Absolutely. And that's what the church at this point in time was looking for, is absolute power over this area. This is, again, when we're having a lot of religious wars. You have the fighting of Catholicism against so many other religions. You have against Protestantism, all of the different Middle Eastern religions, everything else that's going on in the world. So they have to secure their place as the religion for this area. And how do they do that?
Well, they condemn anyone who's against them and burn them at the stake.
And that's what we see
play out. Seems pretty effective. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we see play out over the next few hundred years. And it works. It works. I mean, the UK overwhelmingly becomes Catholic until we get Henry VIII, and that's a whole different thing. But overwhelmingly is Catholic. Paganism starts to die out. We start to see less and less cunning folk.
Laws in England change starting in the 16th century to reflect public opinion, I think to reflect the general opinion of witchcraft. So in 1542, under the reign of Henry VIII, witchcraft became punishable by death. But that would be repealed when Henry VIII passed away in 1547. So that was about a 5-year law that made witchcraft punishable by death. But they're going to come back again. And in 1562, the act is restored, but it specified that only witchcraft that destroyed or killed another person was punishable by death. So we kind of have an eye for an eye kind of mentality there. This was after another attempted plot to kill Queen Elizabeth I and reinstate the Catholic Church with the help of witchcraft. So that's what, Mary, Queen of Scots?
Yeah, so that would have been her opposition. So, of course, Queen Elizabeth I, she is the daughter of Henry VIII, who's taken over and becomes the Queen of England. And she is Protestant, like her father. And they want to reinstate Catholicism, and they want to do so using witchcraft. So this is then when we see another flip of some of the Catholic Church saying, well, this is a power that we can harness. Let's try and use it against the queen. But it has the, I guess, opposite. I don't know if it's the opposite effect because they managed to ban it again. It's a very confusing outlook. But
so what it sounds like to me is there's an attempted plot to kill Queen Elizabeth the first. And as a result, what, people, her aides, her advisors were speculating that it was as a result of witchcraft. And so they in turn reinstate the Catholic Church.
No, so they were trying. So the witchcraft. So the attempted assassination was through the powers of witchcraft. And they wanted to kill her to reinstate the Catholic Church. So it's using the worst.
So they wanted to use witchcraft to give the Catholic, to give Catholicism the upper hand.
Yes.
That seems pretty hypocritical.
Yep.
That's fine. Whatever.
So they're harnessing the worst part of their religion, because again, this still falls under their religion with the devil and demons and all of that. So they're harnessing the worst part of this to try and thwart their enemies so they can take over again.
So the next change in law in England is in 1604, and we see transferred witch trials from the church to the regular. So whenever someone brings up a charge of witchcraft, the trials, well, they go from the church to the regular state courts. So regular state courts are now prosecuting witchcraft in England by 1604. This does outlaw the use of torture to get a witch confession, which, I mean, the definition of torture in 1604 was quite different from today. For example, sleep deprivation and starvation was allowed, but, you know, what? Could they still put your thumbs through screws, too?
No. So anything like that they couldn't do, but they could do, like, sensory things. So keeping you awake, not giving you food and water, making you walk. This was a really common tactic used by witch finders, is they would make you do laps just constantly until you finally told them what you wanted. You'd fall down, they'd pick you up and make you do it again. So,
jeez.
Yeah, so that would constitute, I would think, as torture in our eyes, but it didn't classify under the laws that are passed in 1604.
Well, my mind immediately goes to, like, scenes. Have you seen The Report?
Yes.
So my that's a movie, I think it's on Amazon Prime, with Adam
Driver.
Oh, he's so hot.
He is so hot. I'll watch anything with him in it.
Hot. And it's like, I don't even think he's particularly attractive. I just think he's such a great actor.
He has a really good, like, air about him, for lack of a better phrasing.
Have you watched him in Girls?
Yeah. Oh,
He's hot there too.
I know. It's weird. Like, I hate you, but also please marry me.
Please marry me.
That's my problem. This is why I can't date.
You're like, there it is. I just outlined my exact problem. You're an issue. Please marry me.
Yep, that's how that goes.
Okay. But the point of that was I my mind went to them scenes of them torturing suspected terrorists. And it kind of seems like those methods, those means would have been perfectly acceptable. But this is at a time where turning thumb screws or putting someone on the rack was like, I can get them to confess. Just let me put them on the rack. I mean, geez. So the last and final English law where we see a change in how witchcraft is charged under the law or how witchcraft is dealt with under the law is in 1735. So at this point, we see the language and the punishment structure change pretty significantly. But at this point, it added fortune tellers to the punishable list, the list of crimes punishable by law. We have witchcraft and we have fortune tellers. So this remains in force until 1951, when it was replaced by an act outlawing witch frauds that was repealed in 2008. These are the ties that bind, man. Anything like that? Those are some serious roots. That's crazy.
And a lot of this is actually, I don't know if racist is the correct word. I guess racist or xenophobic, because the fortune teller aspect is something that is associated with the travelers and like Irish travelers really from any country. And so it was against them. It was so you could prosecute them for something and say, well, you're a fortune teller, so you get to go to prison or whatever the laws stated. And that was a really big issue.
Isn't it? I think gypsy's like a derogatory term now, isn't it? Hasn't it been deemed?
I mean, technically it is. I don't know. I have friends in England who are travelers and they'll refer to themselves sometimes as gypsies. So I don't know. I use travelers because that tends to be the more acceptable term.
Well, it sounds like you have experience with people who are of this persuasion, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they are still prosecuted. Travelers are still prosecuted in England to this day through a whole different like section of laws. And that it's still, I mean, that you can watch.
For what?
Just for all sorts of things. People just don't like them. They're very prejudiced against travelers, traveling societies. A lot of times, unfortunately, there is this like preconceived notion that they're involved in organized crime. And sometimes that's true. Not always. But sometimes, if you watch, have you ever watched My Big Fat Gypsy Wedding?
Yeah. Or My Big Gypsy Wedding? Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's been a long time. But I know exactly those huge pink ball gown dresses. That's what's coming to mind right now.
Yeah. So those are the modern day travelers.
Ah.
And they do. They travel. And the reason they travel is it's for work. So they'll travel like to different areas to get different jobs. They're like, I guess, kind of nomadic in that sense, but they get a really bad reputation. They're usually the ones that run the carnivals in the UK, and circuses and things like that. But they just have a really bad reputation with, I would say, most British people. And there's a really big prejudice and it's a massive problem.
Well, that's super interesting. And I did not know that. So thank you for telling me. And I don't think I'll use the word gypsy. I just don't think that that's a word that I think I feel like that I've been told that that is a derogatory term nowadays. So
yeah, it's been used because it'll be like the language in some of these laws will use that. It's been used like against people. So generally it's traveler and it's different. I think it's different if they're referring to themselves in that way. But as we are not part of the traveler
right.
community,
that's not a word for me to use. Yeah, I get it.
Probably.
I get that. That's totally fine.
But yeah, yeah, I would say from the people I know, they always, it's traveler is most of the time.
You know, I don't know. I know people think that some terminology, not using a certain word is like splitting hairs. But I think that if you're a part of community and the rest of the world is trying to categorize you? Should you not have some power over what people call you? Is that unreasonable to expect that you should have some manner of control, or at least you have the right to get pissed if somebody calls you something that you deem as inflammatory, as something that's been used in the past to insult that culture? I don't think that that is that out of bounds. What's next?
So literature. Literature is a massive thing during this whole time of what gets printed. And there are numerous books that we could go through, but these are just three that caught my attention. The Discovery of Witchcraft from 1584. I'm going to talk about King James's book, Demonology, and another book called The Discovery of Witches by a Matthew Hopkins. First up is The Discovery of Witchcraft by an MP from Kent named Reginald Scott. And it was basically this big book of skepticism. Like, hey, you guys have been killing witches for like 200 years now. Why are we doing this? Like, where does this come from? It's very unchristian in this man's view. And it's irrational. Like, how do you think someone is a witch? Like, it doesn't compute. I would like to say, though, that this man, whose name was Reginald Scott, did believe in unicorns and believed that precious stones came from heaven. So that was his level of rationality, I suppose.
Well, that doesn't sound that out of bounds for 1584.
No,
I don't know.
Not a real thing. So I just found that really interesting.
Unicorns, eh? What did he say specifically about unicorns?
So people believe that unicorn horns had special magical properties that could help with healing. And he believed that that was a true thing. And it's interesting. I believe it's Scotland. Is it Scotland or Wales?
You better get that right.
Jackie's going to murder me if I don't know. It is Scotland. I had it right the first time. So Scotland actually has the unicorn on their flag to this day.
No.
So this was a pretty big part of like folklore, I suppose, or belief system.
Mythical creatures.
Yeah, mythical creatures. And Wales is the dragon. Wales is the dragon. Scotland is the unicorn. Okay. So he believed in that, but he didn't believe that witches were a true thing. He said it was unchristian, especially because by this point he's witnessed, maybe not firsthand, but he's read about, he's heard about how these witch trials go about. And with torture being allowed, and I mean, it technically had been banned 40 years prior to this, but you're depriving people of things, our version of torture. Sure. With that still going on, with people being burned at the stake and hanged. And this was a horrible death, because most of these hangings weren't like what you're thinking of the tall gallows. And it's the, what did they used to call it? The quick drop and the
quick
or the short
the
drop,
quick and drop and the southern stop.
That one. So that didn't happen with these hangings. It was a very short set of gallows because they're usually makeshift. So a person is being basically falling off of like a stool height, and they're being suffocated to death more often than it breaks their neck. So this is a horrible death. And this is what he's hearing about. So he's saying, well, how can this be Christian of us to do to other people?
Which is fair.
So, yeah, so it's totally fair. So he writes this whole book. He also has a very astute observation, especially considering he's a member of parliament and so would have been part of the upper classes. He says that all of these people that are being accused of witches are old women who can't defend themselves. He said there are people that other people in their communities wanted to get rid of, that they didn't want to take care of. And this was wholly unfair. He's like, if you are a woman and you have a cat or a dog by your side, you're in trouble.
Oh, man. Oh, hey, by the way, that there's one of the scenes, and not to, I guess, spoiler alert. So if you're going to read The Burning Time, I'm about to ruin it for you. But when Alice flees, she has a cat who is just a total G, like hangs out with her in her bed, you know, just a great cat. And she poisoned the cat because she thought that they were going to torture it. And she thought that that was a better death. And it describes the poisoning of the cat. I mean, I cried. I did. I cried. I'm a big cat person. I have two cats. I'm also a dog person. I have two dogs. But, you know, it hurt me. It hurt me because I knew, even though this was a fictional account, I knew that was true, right? So if they caught this cat, they would have definitely done something terrible to it. So she killed the cat in an effort to prevent it from suffering.
That's so sad. And I mean, if you see what they're doing to people, who knows what they were doing to animals? But yeah, so there's this whole book. And there are other books that kind of plagiarize off of this in later years.
What about The Witch's Hammer?
The Witch's Hammer?
Yeah. The Witch's Hammer. I think that was the first book on witchcraft ever written.
Yes. The Witch's Hammer. What year was that again?
I think it was in the 1400s. The Witch's Hammer.
Because didn't that outline how to spot a witch?
Oh, it was all of it.
How to spot and
it was in 1486.
Deal with a witch. Mm-hmm. Because it was akin to the, what was it called? It sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Malleus Maleficarum. And it was written in 1486. The author is Heinrich Kramer. And
German.
Yeah, he was a...
Well, from what would become Germany.
Yeah, he was a Catholic clergyman. Heinrich Kramer.
Yes, and this is the book that a lot of witch finders would use to outline how to pursue and try a witch. Following that book, there's a lot of people that kind of pick it up and run with it.
You want to hear some crazy numbers? So between 1653 and 1750, 200,000 people were killed because of accusations of witchcraft. That's almost that's over 1,000 per year were either burned at the stake, drowned. You think of any nasty variety of how to kill a witch from the Middle Ages, and there you go, you know? So just terrible.
Yeah, and this is spurred on further by yet another monarch of James I and VI, because he responds to the discovery of witchcraft, not to be confused with the discovery of witches, which I'll get to in a minute, but he responds to it with his own book called Demonology, and he's the only monarch to have ever written a book on witches.
So just for the layperson, when we say James I and the VI, that is Mary, Queen of Scots' son. So he assumes the throne after Queen Elizabeth I dies, and he is King James VI of Scotland and King James I of England. So he has two distinctions, and he writes the book Demonology, right? Okay.
Yes, and he's in the Stuart dynasty, if anyone kind of does it by that family name.
He's a Stuart.
The Stuarts are actually super interesting. And everyone kind of goes on about the Tudors, but the Stuarts.
The Stuarts are so interesting. And like a lot, I don't know, they're all pretty violent.
Yeah, yeah. Well, King James, I'll call him King James the First.
Just call him King James.
Call him the whole, yeah. King James. We'll call him King James.
King James.
So this book of Demonology, he is seeing what's going on. And at least from the documentary that we watched, and I can't remember her name, but it was called Witches, A Century of Murder.
Witches, A Century of Murder. It's on Netflix. And, well, prepare yourselves, because in the first 5 minutes, you see someone getting their fingers viced.
Bad, but it's a really good documentary.
Yeah.
It's a really good documentary. And so the historian who's in that, and I'm really sorry, I don't remember her name off the top of my head. I think it's Savannah or Susanna. She said that he wrote this to try and give a proper outline of how to go about pursuing witches and how to try them so everyone was fair, because he was very concerned about all of the innocent people that were being killed because of these accusations of witchcraft. However, it didn't really have that effect. People took this book and said, well, it's from the monarch and he says witches exist and we can hunt them down and this is how we do it.
Well, and I think an interesting connection to make too, this is the King James who did the King James Bible. So you see this Mary, he's trying to eradicate witches while also formulating a new Bible that many people still use today, right? So that connection between witchcraft and religion is, I think, solidified forever. I mean, this is the moment, right? This is the early 1600s, and then by the end of the century, you have the Salem witch trials. So this is it. This is where we see the true, demonization? Like, I mean, this is, yeah.
Yeah, this is a real turning point. And this book comes out in 1590. So it's even a few years, about 14 years before he passes those laws to transfer witch trials from the church to the state. So he sees the problems that are occurring from this and moves to have this, I guess, changed. So they have a little bit more control over it. And next, I'm going to talk about the discovery of witches by the Witchfinder General, self-appointed Matthew Hopkins.
Of course he was self-appointed. Who the fuck would give him that designation? Are you kidding me? The Witchfinder General? You know what? That's my title now. Guess what? I believe it, so it must be a thing. There we go.
Should we put it on our LLC paperwork?
Hashtag Witchfinder General. Oh my God, yes. Margaret Coomer, Witchfinder General. I love it. It's good. It's good.
Yes, we'll get that on our business
Hell
cards.
Yeah.
You can be the Witchfinder General.
Dude. Oh, so much that we can do with this.
So it's a self-designated title that he picks because he believes that demonology supports him in doing so. So he offers his services to towns all across England.
Of course.
And, yeah.
For the bargain price of what?
Of 20 shillings.
20 shillings?
20 shillings. 20 shillings. But in reality, he was actually coming away with an average of 40 pounds from each town.
Oh. Wow. So we go from, I will eradicate your town of any and all witches for 20 shillings. And then he leaves with a pocket full of coins.
Yeah, because he charges them for the gallows, for holding the witches, for interrogation.
He's nickel and diming these people to get rid of their witches for them.
And that's what actually does him in. People don't get mad that he's killing literally hundreds of people. He was responsible for 200 to 400 deaths in a span of less than 3 years. They don't get mad about that. They get mad that he's taking their money.
I mean, I would get mad about that. You know, if I had a problem and I'm like, all right, well, this guy says he can get rid of this witch for 20 shillings. Let's do it. And he shows up and he's like, well, there's a traffic fee. I've got a transport this witch in the cage, so you gotta I'm gonna charge you for the use of the cage unless you have your own cage, right? And then I have a jail over here. If you want her to stay in this jail, it's gonna cost you a couple bubs. Are you ready? Unless you have your own jail that you want to use. No, you don't have your own jail.
I have to charge you for going to your own jail.
Oh, and yeah, the trip to the jail is also, unless you want to like take her yourself. No Okay, all right, so let's pony up here. 40 pounds, thank you. Like, that's an early capitalist for you.
Yeah. And this book actually is a big part of his downfall because he details how he does this in the book and that he's self-appointed and all of this stuff. And it's in, once they compare it to demonology, he's actually in contrast to this. He also details his torture techniques. And one of them he said he pulled from demonology, and it was that a person, and again, I got this from that documentary, so really good, watch it.
And what's it called again?
It is called Witches, A Century of Murder on Netflix.
On Netflix, okay.
In this documentary, they said that Hopkins takes demonology, takes a passage that said a witch will essentially ignore their baptism, they'll reject their baptism, and he uses that to essentially waterboard people. He'll throw them into, like, bodies of water and partially drown them and then pull them out and then do it again and again and again until they confess to witchcraft.
Because if they drown, they're a witch. And then if they confess, well, then he gets to burn them at the stake. So there's no way out, right?
No. It's
you either confess to being a witch and then get burned to the stake, or you just drown.
It's a win-win. And about 80% of the people he kills, he executes, are women. So, of course, a lot of this is...
They're healers. Is directed most of them are healers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of this is happening in the southeast of England. He doesn't make it super far. He makes it through quite a few towns in the southeast, but that's about as far as he gets.
So now we're at about the year 1612, okay? So at this point, let's talk a little bit about some of the more modern, when I say modern, I mean like 17th, 18th, 19th century trials and executions of women and just people in general, connected in general with witchcraft. So tell me a little bit about that.
So a really big one that gets talked about a lot, so we'll talk about that too, is the Pendle trials, which happened in Lancashire in 1612. And this is, by this point, witchcraft is very well known throughout the country, like what it looks like, what you should expect. People are very scared of it. And there is a family of cunning folk still living in this village.
Where is this? Where is this again?
Lancashire. Do you know where Blackpool is?
I'm all about Blackpool.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I don't know where that is.
Blackpool is like a really shitty version of Vegas.
Oh, man. That sounds like my kind of town. Yeah. Are you kidding?
If we ever go over there, we have to go. It's like the classic trashy English holiday.
Are you kidding? That's where we should go. That's the reason to go. I'm just kidding. You might want to see your family. Who knows? I'm going to Blackpool. I'll see you there.
Trust me, you want me to go with you.
Okay.
Don't want to go there on your
Yeah,
own.
I don't. Just this poor, unassuming Tennessee girl who has no idea what's going on.
Just don't. Okay. All right. So we're going to talk about the Pendle Trials, which happened in 1612 in Lancashire, which, Maggie, are you familiar with Liverpool?
I'm familiar with the Beatles.
So it's north. So basically, if you're thinking like northwest is where Lancashire is. Part of it's on the coast. It's really pretty up there. And there is a small village there that has a family of cunning folk. And again, these are often the people in their communities that are accused of witchcraft. And by the 1600s, most people are very well acquainted with what witchcraft looks like and what they should be looking for. And there is a young woman in this family. She's a teenager, by all accounts. I'm not sure exactly what side of the teenager spectrum she falls on.
Doesn't matter.
But young. Yeah, she's
young. Young teenage girl. Boom.
Young teenage girl. And she is walking down a road one day, and a peddler passes her, and he won't even acknowledge her. And she gets really mad at this and curses him. And he falls to the ground immediately by her story. And honestly, his symptoms are actually that of a stroke, but she doesn't know that. And she thinks that her curse has done this to him. And she just feels overwhelmed with guilt because that's never happened to her before. She's never experienced that. It was a moment of anger, and she didn't mean to cause any harm. So she turns herself in as a witch. She goes to the local authority and she says, "It was me. I did this. I'm so sorry. I don't know what to do." And they torture the poor girl, at least by the standards that they were allowed to at that time. And she turns her whole family in. So her whole family gets arrested and imprisoned, and they will sit in a dark, damp prison cell for at least 4 months. There are 12 people that end up in this tiny little cell. And unfortunately, her grandmother will pass away in this time. In this, I mean, if you've seen medieval castles and prisons, that's what you have to think of here.
So I think of cold, dank, damp cobblestones and some putrid straw that's been changed like one time per year that you're supposed to mess in. I don't know. That's what I'm envisioning.
Yeah, that's about right. So it's this horrible space that they are left in. And actually, you can go and see that space today. It's still there. If you find Pendle Hill. Mm. Or what was Pendle Hill. I'm not sure that it's called the same thing. So, yeah, she accuses her whole family, and they will stand trial. And this trial, I mean, this is huge for the local prosecutor. Well, we'll refer to him as a prosecutor because these little country places, nothing ever happens particularly, nothing exciting, but you have a witch trial and there are 12 people that you have imprisoned. And this is going to expand once they interrogate everyone to 20 people. 19 will stand trial as the grandmother passes away.
Oh,
19 people. This is huge. This is huge. I just not sound like Donald Trump. Huge.
It's
for this.
Huge. It's going to be huge. I promise. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. It's going to be the best witch trial ever. It's going to be better than everyone else's witch trial. It's huge. Sorry.
And that's exactly what the prosecutor thought. Exactly what the prosecutor thought. So he wanted to prove himself. He's got this huge trial. And he's going to try the 19 people who are still living. Well, the problem he has is a lot of this is conjecture. It's people accusing other people. So he might have the young girl who admitted to committing an act of witchcraft. And she goes so far to change her story that not only did she curse this man, but she conjured up this large dog who attacked him. She really gets into it. And I think she just racked with guilt. And then you have her living in this dark cell for 4 months. And it's just, it's awful. So he might have her, but the rest of the people there are denying their involvement. And they're blaming each other. So he can't get a conviction off of that. So what is he going to do? What is his option here? Well, he does like a lot of witch trials and he finds someone to be a witness. But this trial in particular is really messed up because his witness is another family member. He pulls the 9-year-old child from this family, who is the only one who had not been imprisoned, and uses her as a witness. Now, by British court standards, this actually was illegal. But demonology, again, going back to King James's book, says that children and women can be witnesses. And so he uses that as justification here. So this 9-year-old is made to give testimony against her own family. So he uses this 9-year-old girl. They convict 10 of the 19 witches that stand trial.
Jesus.
Based on that. And they're all her family.
Based on this 9-year-old girl's testimony.
Yeah. And her entire family gets convicted and sentenced to death.
The entire family is sentenced to death?
Yeah. Her little sister said, yeah, I've seen them all consort with the devil. Think Crucible. So they execute all of them. And it's likely that the little girl would have been present at her own family's executions because that was how you did it then.
And they would have turned to her and said, you did a good thing today.
Mm-hmm.
You made the world a better place.
Now, in a cruel, maybe not so cruel twist of irony, the only other record for this little girl comes up about 20 years later. And it may or may not be the same person, but she was tried for witchcraft. And
no. Was she executed? Do you know?
Yes, she was.
Oh my God. So 20 years later?
20 years later. There's a record for the same name. The age is correct. And she would be tried for witchcraft.
And executed.
Yes. And I mean, they would have had the precedent because her entire family were witches.
Well, of course. In case you don't believe me, this young girl 20 years ago testified that her family was partaking in the crime of witchcraft, and therefore the seed is as bad as the tree. We must stamp it out. Yes, we agree with you, Justice whatever. Yeah,
well, I'm thinking that's how I envision it. Other people had heard, if there were other family, there were obviously other families there that she had accused of witchcraft. So when it comes around to the next round of witch trials,
it's like, your turn.
Yeah. It's like, well, you accused my family. I'm going to accuse you. And that happened all the time. I mean, that's the whole premise of the principle.
Exactly.
The accusations that aren't true. And that's actually a true story based on a true story, too.
I saw a production of The Crucible in Knoxville. And it was the most unbelievable. When I say unbelievable, I mean, it was so good that it has stuck with me. These local actors were fantastic. And then I watched the Winona Ryder, Daniel Day-Lewis version. It's Daniel Day-Lewis, right?
I think so.
I think it's Daniel Day-Lewis. I don't know. Either way, it was not as good as this play I saw in Knoxville, Tennessee, of The Crucible. I mean, these guys, these actors were incredible. They were so good. And it was so visceral because, I mean, the way that the theater was set up, you know, you had rows of theater goers, but the characters were able to walk down and get on the stage. Like, the stage wasn't, like, high up. It was, like, you just walk a couple of steps, and you're on the stage. So they implemented, you know, characters and actors coming from all directions just to, like, kind of disorient you a little bit, which I think is perfect. And it's definitely, it goes with the territory because, I mean, what's more disorienting than being accused of witchcraft, you know? So it was really good. It was so good.
When I first moved to England, I was Mercy Lewis in The Crucible in a local play production.
Dude, I love your life. So how do you feel about witches?
How do I feel about witches? Well, I feel really honestly sad. This makes me very upset because it's obviously targeted mostly at women. In fact, the last person killed in the UK for witchcraft was in 1727 and was a woman, Janet Horne, who was hanged. So it makes me feel sad. It's obviously, to me, it's an element of control exercised over women who had a role other than wife, mother, or prostitute within their communities.
I mean, as in a society like the Middle Ages of England, a woman who tries to assert independence from the church, from men, from any type of binding societal treaties, I think that women are punished for it.
You brought up a really interesting point when we were talking about this episode earlier in the week of how the view of witches has changed. Do you remember that conversation of seeing like the old witch, like with all of the, you know, skin blemishes and marks, and how she is really ugly and scary to going to like someone like Bewitched?
Or Angelica Houston of the Addams Family. I feel like that goes into witchcraft a little bit.
Exactly. Or Hocus Pocus. So all of these different renditions and views of how we see witches changes based on what society is doing. And every time that feminism has taken a dive or it's become unpopular again, we see the ugly witches. We see the ugly witches and Satanism and all of these like terrible things.
Do we have it all?
I think so. We brought us all the way to modern day, which is amazing. We started in the 1300s. We covered 700 years of witch history.
In an hour and a half. Okay, by the time this is edited down, in about 45 minutes. There we go. All right, cool. Well, folks, we hope you enjoyed this. If you liked what you heard, I want you to head to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. All right, not that hard. Pull up the Apple Podcast app, type in the good old days, type in 5 stars, and type in a glowing review. If you don't want to do it through Apple Podcasts, I want you to go to our website, thegoodolddayspod.com, and send us a form, a contact form, and tell us what you thought about this episode. Jasmine, what about social stuff?
Well, first, should we read? I really want to read that review from our fan, Cara.
Yeah. Dude, this girl has been repping hard for us, and we love you, Kara.
Yeah, I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. I apologize.
Kara Kara.
Kara, I don't know. It's K-A-R-A. Kara? Kara? Mm-hmm. Kara?
Kara?
Anyway, Kara, let us know how Kara. To pronounce your name and we'll say it correctly next time.
We'll say it right, girl. We will get you.
But she left us such a nice review. And she just said, great and entertaining podcast. This podcast is fun to listen to and each episode tackles an interesting subject. My favorite episode so far is the one on Anne Bonny and Mary Read. And she's also left us a ton of really nice comments on Twitter. So thank you so much. So if you want to reach out to us on social media, you can do so on Twitter at The Good OD Pod, or on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok at The Good Old Days Pod. And as Halloween is this weekend, I want to see everyone's Halloween costume. I have a crystal crown and bat wings, and I don't know what it's going to turn into yet, but I'm really excited.
Happy Halloween, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we hope you have a fabulous week. Be safe, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.